Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. The NAMM Foundation is working to assure that all children have the opportunity to learn and grow with music, and that music is part of daily living for everyone. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, this is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation. Welcome to this episode of Talking Up Music Education. And I am lucky to have Parmalee in the house.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Please be sure you're joining us here at Facebook, at InterTalk Radio and NAMM Foundation. Let all your friends know, especially fans of Parmalee, which there are a lot, right?
Yes,
there are a lot. Know that we're having one of those spontaneous and fun conversations with three of the members.
Yep.
Scott is missing, but we won't hold it against him.
He never can find a drummer.
He is actually entertaining Mr. Parmalee, the guy, the house that we practiced in Parmalee, is here for his first NAMM, so it's really cool. So he taught us how to play guitar, so it's really cool.
Oh, well, we'll let him do that.
Let him do that.
So Matt Thomas, Barry Knox, and best friend Josh McSwain. Brother and brother, cousin, and best friend.
Yeah.
All from a little town, Parmalee, North Carolina. Population, when you were there?
270-something.
Is it still about the same?
Probably a little less.
Right, you guys are gone, right?
Yeah.
Well, they closed the store down a couple of years ago, so.
Like the general store or the,
Well, the store you could buy beer and
that's important.
And beer, nabs, and
numbers.
Cigarettes.
Before they had the lottery in North Carolina, you could, the lady up there was selling, running numbers through there. So you could do a little gambling, get you some smokes and some beer.
And now it's legal.
Yeah, now it's legal.
So I think that's why it shut down.
Right. Well, they just told me that they had a really fun night. Let's start with just the last 24 hours. Where were you last night?
We did the Grand Ole Opry last night.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which commenced to a late night jam session on my back porch with the
Mr.
Parmalee, Mark Bryan, and that lasted till like 1 this morning.
So he came in for that, to see you guys.
He came in, and he didn't know that NAMM was going on, so it all fell into place. So it was really cool, really cool.
Yeah, that's great. So and who else was at the Grand Ole Opry last night with you guys playing? And that's what happens.
Joe Bonamassa showed up, which was the coolest part.
Yeah.
Played with our buddy Chase.
Chase Bryant.
I always wonder that in Nashville, if you know, like, when another great musician says, "Well, I think I'm going to go down to the Opry," and you know, they'll let me on stage, you know, and they kind of do, right?
Yeah, that or down on Broadway, you never know who you're going to see.
It's really, really cool. So one thing we always do on Talking at Music Education with our guests is we want to hear your origin story. Because what Talking at Music Education is about ultimately is we're really trying to, you know, tell the stories of that people can make music wherever they come from, you know, whatever their background, and how we create more opportunities for people of all ages and abilities to make music. You know, what's going to happen to our world when everyone's making music, right? Going to a party like you guys love to play for. So I'd love to hear, especially growing up in such a small town. Right? Well, you know, what were the opportunity you have early on? How did you learn your instruments? How did you know that this was something in you that could really take you into the world the way you wanted it to be? Start with you, man.
My dad, he played guitar, and he was the local rock star, I guess.
Your dad. He was the first teacher. First one.
Yeah, he had a guitar, and he was, I remember from the time I was little going to see, he'd be on a flatbed trailer out in the ballpark playing for the 4th of July party or whatever. So
he was the guy.
Yeah, he was the guy.
He was the guy who had the band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of grew up right next to him.
Yeah, and I knew I wanted to do it. So it was always that thing, you know. Daddy had a guitar, so that was that aura kind of thing.
And was he a songwriter too?
Yeah.
Did he write his own songs?
Yeah, he did.
So, how did he learn?
I think he was the one guy in town back in the day that picked it up and started one of the first guys in that little small town to pick it up back in the 60s, I think.
And is he still with you?
No, he's not. He passed in 2006.
Yeah, yeah.
But But I still play his guitar every night now.
Yeah, you play his guitar. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any formal training then? Or was it just really, you had an ear, it all just hit. Did you listen to 1,000 artists? I mean, there's got to be 10,000.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's got to be 10,000 hours in there somewhere, right? I mean, we know.
Way more than that.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
But that many in yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this great saying from Malcolm Gladwell, if you want to start mastering, it's the first 10,000 hours. It's exactly like that, right. You get to first base.
Yes,
100%. So there was.
Yeah. I mean, from the time I started playing guitar, I'd get up in the morning and practice 2 hours before school, and I'd get home and play 2 hours, go to ball practice, and get back home and play more, record into a tape recorder and jam to myself.
Back in the day, the little tape recorder.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was nonstop guitar and just studying, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and the Allman Brothers and stuff like that. So
really seriously self-taught.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously self-taught.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that many times.
Seriously.
Right? He still can't read music to
this day. Right. Yeah, but it's still, you know, it's still then the investment.
Hard. I think that time from when you first start until you go off to college, even in college, that 5 or 6 years or 7 years from first picking up a guitar to being out on my own was like just immerse myself and all just practice.
So any study in college? Music study?
No, not really. I took one music class. I got a C in it.
You were that guy.
Basic music skills. Had a hard time with that class.
Don't hold it against us. I was a classically trained musician.
Wow.
So don't hold this against us.
I don't know. I'm in awe of the yeah.
Don't be in too in awe. I'm in awe of you. I've never played at the Opry, so look, don't be too in awe. You did the work, though.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
How about you, Cousin Barry? Second cousin?
First cousin. So his father was my uncle.
And did they play in this famous band in the back of a flatbed truck?
My mother, his dad's sister, she played in church. She was head of choir.
I knew there was going to be church in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so she was head of the choir. She played piano and organ in church. And I picked it up from her. I started playing piano at a young age. And she put me in piano lessons, and I hated it. Yeah. I went 3 times, and on the 3rd time, I told her I didn't want to go anymore.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't enjoy doing it. But every night after that, I would go to Grandma's house and listen to Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin and try to pick it out on the piano.
Grandma had a good collection, huh? Yeah.
She was rocking, man.
I want to be that kind of a grandma's.
Grandma's, listen to some Aerosmith.
What happened?
Well, she had the boombox. I had the tapes. So I'd bring my tapes over.
And she was a cool grandma, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then after that, I got interested in the drums and after begging, they got me a drum kit, and I just I surrounded my drum kit with speakers, and I had my stereo behind me, and I'd play all my favorite albums and just play along with it.
And you did your 10,000 hours to get you the first.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I loved it so much. I spent all my time behind my drum kit and just learning every lick I could learn, and I just kind of taught myself.
Yeah.
No formal training, just like him. You know, where we came from, honestly, I didn't even know there was a such thing as school of music. Like it didn't exist in our world.
Right.
You know,
right.
There was nobody from our area that had gone to music school or had any type of success in the music industry. So it just, we basically had to teach ourselves.
And you had these key little germs, your dad, your mom. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just this. And how about you?
Very similar to Matt's story. My dad played in a band, and his band would practice at our house in the basement. So all the instruments were always there and always set up. And I would just pick them up and play with them during the day and took an interest in it. My mom put me in piano lessons too.
Don't say you hated it.
I hated it.
You know what? I left that part out too. My mom put us in piano lessons.
Well, they all tried.
She did a great job.
My mom didn't let me quit. Yeah. I ended up taking for like 11 years. Yeah. So
thank goodness.
I wish I'd have paid more attention because I'd be way better.
But see, note to self.
That is
right.
That is definitely
note
to self.
In other words, education is really not lost.
Yeah, right. I wish I'd have stayed.
I wish I'd have stayed.
All right, we'll put that up as a hashtag somewhere.
Yes.
Right. I mean, honestly, we know that it's difficult as as kids, and you know, my daughter too played for 10 years and then she finally just like on her knees, you know, begged me to stop, right? I mean, just really like with tears streaming down her face, and you kind of go, you know, me doing what I do, I'm going to let you quit. But it was like, and she said to me the other day, Mom, it will always be in me. And I was like, saved, right? Yeah. It'll always be. Mm-hmm. But then you're looking back and said, you wish you'd had stayed, you know, tried a little harder, but it's okay.
Right.
It's okay. Yeah.
And then I used college to go and get as far away from my hometown as I could. Which I went to the farthest place I could go and still get in-state tuition, which was Greenville. And that's where I met these guys.
Ah, okay.
And then,
so you all were there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. University of North Carolina.
But Josh, you were in band the whole time in high school.
Yeah, through high school. I played in bands.
What
I was in the marching band. Played the quads. I was in the
drum
line.
One of those guys.
Yeah, he's
mm-hmm. great.
He's by far the most talented guy in the band.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know about that.
Educated, too.
Right. Yeah, most educated.
Do we have any questions about anything musical, we'll ask Josh.
Well, at least you got one.
Yeah, you have one. Right. Yeah.
I'll make up all kinds of answers.
It makes up. He could be telling us anything.
So, but you were from Parmalee, too, right?
I'm not.
You're not.
I'm from Shelby, North Carolina, on the other end of the state.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay.
But and I moved there.
You met it. You met that in college, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you grew up together, basically.
Yeah.
Your brother? How much older? Who's younger?
He's a year older than me, 13 months. Okay. So, mm-hmm. well, yeah, we started a band from when we first were able to play. You know, we started a band, him and a dude from high school. And then my dad, at the same time, started his band going. Got the band back together. So we would go out there and watch them rehearse. And then eventually a couple of them guys fell out of the band. And when I got good enough, he got me and my brother in the band. So it was me and my brother, my dad, mm-hmm. and they got us here with us, Mr. Parmalee, Mr. Mark, right? And then we eventually got Barry in the band.
Yeah.
And then it's crazy because it all kind of flows into them. We started Parmalee or the first version of this, and we got Josh in. So we're all on the stage together playing, mm-hmm. you know, and it's kind of one big thing.
And the four just came together. As the right.
Well, yeah,
ingredient.
We wanted to.
It was about the time that JT, their dad, was about to, you know, kind of hang it up, and we still wanted to play. You know, we still wanted to write, and Josh was playing in a different band called Amsterdam, and we were playing the same clubs. We invited Josh out to Parmalee to come jam with us and see if anything.
I think it's when we all wanted to start writing our own music. Because I was playing in a cover band, and their band was pretty much a cover band.
That's right.
And we decided we wanted to get together and see what we could come up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, going back to that too, my dad had written a couple cool songs. We always liked playing those songs that, not the hits that everybody knew. We'd play like the B-sides, cool stuff. But he wrote some really cool songs that really got me interested. And I think we were tired of, you know, having people yell songs at you all the time and play.
Right.
So we,
right.
you know, brown-eyed girl.
Yeah. How many times?
I think that's my catalyst to writing music was to not have some drunk person yell that at me.
You know,
hey, play brown-eyed girl.
But you know what I think it was? It was like, you know, you put in your 10,000 hours. Yeah. I think it was the 10,000th time we heard play brown-eyed girl when we were like, okay. It's time to do something different.
Right, right. Yeah. If you're going to stay in the business.
Yeah.
Right? Well, if you're going to be in the business, it's time to.
Yeah. Right. Well, we made Barry play bass, obviously.
Yeah.
He went
I was a drummer, and I was playing percussion in mm-hmm. their dad's band. And so we didn't have a bass player, so I had to learn how to play
bass. No, this wasn't that long ago, though. I mean, the last 10 years.
2001.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, 15 years.
Yeah,
15.
I mean. Yeah, yeah.
And you all went to college.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
We went.
I went.
We went.
No, I actually got graduated.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't. I went to, I graduated and I got a degree in industrial technology or something, minor in business.
It's perfect for being
I don't know what it was. All my friends were in it and we were like, what's the easiest way we can get out of get a degree?
You know, that's totally fair, though, because when you're a young person, you just.
Yeah.
You don't know.
I know.
Yeah. You don't know. But I think what you've reinforced and the really, really beautiful, important takeaway is that you had a passion and you just dove into it.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly right. That's all we really cared about.
You had a passion and it didn't matter. You just couldn't keep yourself from doing it.
That's exactly right.
And that's what music is about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the message of our time with our organization and with NAMM is like that passion is just... it's there in doses in a person. Someone might not do what you all have done,
yeah,
but a lot of people are just so motivated by it and start doing it. So
yeah, we had we all did. I went from graduating college to working in the logging woods with my dad for, you know, pretty much, we were just all taking jobs for what, $10 an hour at the best.
Whatever you could get.
At best.
That would let you be off on the weekends.
Yeah. And we did that. And we'd go out to Parmalee and practice. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go to work during the day, get up at 6 and go work all day and meet at Parmalee and practice. Not for fun of it, but because we were writing our own material and we went from making $1,000 a night doing covers to making $100 a night if you got paid. Or paying for paying for the door,
mm-hmm. and it's an expensive
job. We put it on credit, and I don't suggest putting it on credit, but we did, and parents helped us out here and there with loans. We all paid it back, but mm-hmm.
It's a real deal.
Yeah,
it's an investment.
It is a very, very big investment.
You know, we're talking also to younger people that you're in that category still, believe me, that are saying, this is what I want to be, a singer-songwriter. I want to go out and do this. You know, this is the real thing, what you guys have done. You know, you said you worked, you had to work a real job, so quote-unquote, you can go have an unreal job for $100 in a bar, but you got to play your own music.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We were very lucky to have friends, you know, because we played around town and we made some friends, and some of them would own construction businesses and stuff like that. And my dad owned a business. So I asked my dad, hey, can I get off on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? He's like, okay, you know, and our friends, we'd go to work for them, and they knew come Thursday or Friday,
they'd let us off, but we had to put them on the guest list.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All access passes. Right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's great. So when did it change? What happened and when did it change? Is there is that cornerstone of the career went from this to that?
The first change was we wrote this song called Broken Records, and that was the first song we had that we were like, wow. We called our manager, who's sitting right here right now. This was 2001. Kind of got out of the gate. It was like, this is a cool sound. This is a cool thing. And we knew we had a decent song anyway.
And the reason we could tell is because we saw people reacting to it.
Yeah.
They reacted to this song that we wrote.
It was a different feel in
different
the room.
Different than any other song that we've ever done before, yeah.
And that was the first thing. I think the second thing was when I heard the first mix of Carolina, the first version of it. I was like, wow, I really think we got something here, you know. Yeah. But then that was 5 years after that, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years after that.
So about 2006. The last 10 years.
We had that song, and it's just crazy, the story behind it. It's nuts. It could go on for days about how it all happened. But a country artist was going to, this was 2010, a country artist was going to cut Carolina as a country song. So we just came out here and said, we rose our hand up. We're like, we're in Nashville. This guy's got a song that's our song. We wrote it. We're going to live in an RV in the parking lot for a month. And who wants to write with us? Because we got a song coming out on country radio. And we didn't realize how much of a nothing that was. You know, somebody releasing a song and you wrote it, and who cares? You know.
Right.
But we met. We were out here.
But you were vigilant about it.
Oh, very vigilant.
That's the biggest thing that ever happened to us.
I mean, mm-hmm. You were vigilant about it. You know, you weren't going to let that baby out of the truck until you knew that they knew it was your song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's kind of the business side of this, too.
Yeah.
We literally drove our RV and parked in the parking lot on Music Row and lived there for a month.
Oh, everybody thought we were crazy.
And we went out and we met every single person we could meet. And
which, by the way, it was a Key West Songwriter Fest, so none of the big songwriters were in town.
Yeah, nobody was here. Wrong time.
Yeah, and the town flooded that week.
Yeah. But we know what that year was.
Yeah. Yeah, but we had our guy here, Greg Gallo, who used to work for our management company. He had kind of got in this scene and was in it. So he was our one guy and we called him. It's like, man, hook us up with some co-writes. And so he ended up, two of those co-writes that month were, one of them was David Fanning, who we wrote Must Have Had a Good Time With in the RV. And the other was Tommy Cecil, who is produced and wrote a lot of tracks on our latest record, 27861.
How did you know to do that?
You didn't. You don't know.
You just didn't want to go back home.
Yeah,
didn't want this baby to leave without.
Well, we didn't have anything else. We always found one positive thing out of everything that tells you no, you're dumb. The odds tell you this. The numbers tell you this. We're like, well, this guy is cutting our song. What should we do?
Just
well,
sit here?
Let's go to Nashville.
Are we just going to sit here while he cuts our song?
But that was it's completely an idea. We came. We got to be out in Nashville. We knew we needed to be out here anyway. It was just about making that move, and and even after that, we knew we needed to be out here.
And, well, and another thing too, we have to give it up for Mr. Dave Rose. He was with us ever since 2001, and he had always given us good direction. He was the one that kind of convinced us to come to Nashville.
And the state having, right there, by the way, y'all.
Having somebody like that on your side for us has really helped us make smart decisions.
Right. Yeah. And that co-write thing, too, like, you know, you're as a band or as an artist, you know, you really need to – that was the thing he told us when we started writing. He's like, you guys need to go out to Nashville and you need to co-write with people and you need to bring other people in. And I think a lot of people are like kind of defensive towards that, but – you got to give it a shot because, I mean, if you come out to Nashville as a songwriter, I mean, that's all it is. And, and it just, it's wonderful out here. It's just, people can help you and teach you and that kind of thing. And you know, we kind of were introduced to that early on, which was a good thing, you know.
So that we're up to about 2000.
So
2010.
So this was May of 2010,
all
and
right.
then so
6:15 p.m.
Yeah, 6:15. So we meet David Fanning, and he is part of this production team called New Voice Entertainment. And New Voice is basically Jason Aldean's band. It's Tully, Rich, and Kurt from Jason's band, and they just picked up David, young guys, great engineer and songwriter and everything, to be a part of their team. So he said, "I want to go introduce you to the guys." And it was the last day we were here, and the guys showed up. We went to their office and we played. We had Carolina, we played for them. We had Must Have Had a Good Time. We had a couple other songs. Mm-hmm. And we played it and just went in there and tambourine,
acoustic
bottle of whiskey, you know, just jamming out for them, you know. So we did that and we left. I remember getting a phone call in the parking lot halfway home. And he's like, "The guys love it. We want to do a production deal on you. We want you to come back to Nashville and let's record Carolina and Must Have Had a Good Time." Mm-hmm. And so July.
8 years ago.
Yeah.
8 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so in July, we did it. Came back, recorded both those songs, and then we're going to take it to Broken Bow record label. Broken Bow had exclusive rights to their production thing, and like they for right of refusal. So in the meantime, the guy who was putting Carolina out, their label folded. And our label was actually thinking about like signing that guy out on his version of Carolina, which was crazy. And so we had a shot again. We had a shot with it. So our idea is we're going to keep coming to Nashville. And we had like a showcase lined up for the label eventually in the fall and all that stuff. So this is July. And, you know, we go through the summer, pumped up, you know, after being together for God knows how long, 9 years. This is finally happening. We're getting a shot at a label. And then we go play a nightclub on a Monday night and Scott gets shot.
Yeah. I know. What an incredible story that your brother got shot.
Yeah, and that was in the midst of this excitement about, this is finally going to happen
and
for
he
us.
He was really seriously injured.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was bad. Some dudes tried to rob us on the RV. We made $15 that night the door.
It was a Monday night. We were just practicing, getting ready for the showcase in Nashville.
He thought you were such a big deal. He was gonna.
Oh, we finally, after being in a band, you know, together for 9 years, we had one label offer something in 2007, and our management screwed that up. Not Dave, but the lawyer that was working it out. Mm-hmm. And we've had so many ups and downs. Like this is gonna happen, and then nothing happens. This is gonna happen, and finally, we went and recorded the songs. We knew we had some hit songs, and you know, we're gonna be catered right to the label, and then the worst happens, you know.
So how long was he in rehab, and how long did it take for him to come back whole again?
He was in the hospital for 40
days. 10 in a coma.
Yeah.
He's a drummer. He had to have a fasciotomy. So if anybody out there searches, that's where they cut your leg and they drain the lymphatic fluid out of it.
They even told us they might have to cut his leg off. Like they gave us worst case scenario on everything. It was terrible.
Yeah. But.
And then he had a rehab.
Yeah. Well, we rehabbed him so good in the hospital, they couldn't do physical therapy because we were there going, "All right, get up, let's go.
Yeah. Right.
Come on, let's go. We got to go. You got to get you out of here. Got to get you out of here." And then when he came home, he had open wounds. We had to dress the wounds. We had to
set up a hospital at a house pretty much.
Yeah.
So you were taking care of him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You were true bandmates.
Yeah. He was.
You were all one at that point.
Oh, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was learning to walk again. Well, we actually set up a studio in the house so we could record there. while we took care of Scott.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Is he whole now?
Yeah.
Is he back?
Yeah.
He's back.
Oh, wait, where is he?
Yeah, there he is.
He's so good he has to go out party while we're here working. Taking care of an old friend. Yeah. We're here working.
Well, so. it, 4 months later, we came back out here. The label didn't know how bad it was. They were like, can you guys come in February and do a showcase? Come to Nashville. We're like, hell yeah. We'll be there. Scott had like a brace on his leg and everything.
Mm-hmm. So he was playing?
I mean, he still just barely learned how to walk.
Yeah. But we were rehearsing. We had the songs we knew we were going to play. And we came up here. And
well, what a tribute to you guys, though. For, you know, life really shot you, mm-hmm. pun intended, a really bad moment there. And you just dove in and took care of him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a real tribute to who you are.
Didn't really have any choice.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of do.
Yeah.
But you didn't.
Well, I think
because of who you are.
We had a lot of support from fans,
family, friends, everybody.
Family and friends. They really kind of came together and helped.
Yeah.
Helped us take care of them. So.
Yeah. Well, that's terrific. So, that was only 8 years ago, but then he got better.
Yeah.
Things came around again and kind of you haven't looked back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we got signed in that like next July in 2011.
You haven't looked back, right? And how many days of the year are you on the road generally?
All of them.
Home's Nashville now,
couple hundred days. Counting fly dates and in and outs and all kinds of stuff,
right, which is what you want to be when you're a professional musician.
Yeah,
with
you got to be busy.
Your own music and your label and your, that's what you do.
This absolutely.
You're in it now, right? You're in the thick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? Yep.
And it's just where you want to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We love it.
We do love it.
Yeah. And are new things coming to you? More music? Are you writing?
Yeah.
Writing in that tour bus and,
Matt actually just signed a second publishing deal yesterday.
Yeah, I signed with Sony ATV. That was pretty cool because these things happen and you got to take yourself back. Dave reminded me, he's like, dude, you signed a publishing deal and you played the Grand Ole Opry in one day. He's like, think
pinch
about that.
Me.
I know. And I'm like, and I'm sitting here going, oh, got to get another song. What time are we leaving tomorrow? We got to play. And it's like, you
got
to stop.
Laundry.
Yeah. I'm thinking all that stuff. But
Well, here's how I see it. You are creative individuals. You worked really hard. You're really solid from the inside. Right? You took care of each other. You probably still take care of each other a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? This is supposed to happen in a certain way. You know? You got to stay humble.
Yeah.
You got to stay true.
Absolutely.
But, and you're giving the world a party.
Hey, absolutely.
I mean, I looked at all of your videos. I said, you're giving the world a party. The world's coming to you for good feelings, happy feelings. You know, it's really good.
We always to have a good time, and we like for everybody else to have a good time,
too. Yeah, you can just feel it in your music and what you're doing. So the last thing, and then we're going to get to hear from you, our own little version of desk concert.
All right.
I can't wait. But there's something else that was very intriguing to me, which is this private language that you have.
Out of Parmalisms.
Parmalism, yeah. That was also very ingenious to make it sort of a famous part of your brand.
Yeah.
You've got these little snippets of YouTube videos, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many. You've got a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
You're basically spreading, you're evangelizing.
Yeah,
Eastern preaching. Shore, North Carolina.
Well, you've been there. People talk.
Oh, absolutely. It takes you a while, but musical ear really comes in handy. You kind of go, I think I know what
The Outer Banks are a little bit different. They say oat in the boat out there.
Kinda. A little bit they do, yeah. They got that.
Yeah, we have our own language. We talk. The way we talk to each other is people kept asking us what we were saying and how they didn't understand it. So especially our crew that works with us. So we wanted to make a book of words that we say we use.
So
Spoda.
Spoda.
Oh, yes. Scott was supposed to be here today, but he's not.
Supposed to be here.
Yeah.
Right. And Yorn. This is not mine. This is Yorn.
Yes, Yorn. Yeah.
I did it right, right?
You did good. Yeah, Yorn.
This is Yorn.
That's exactly right. You got it.
I think everybody has a local dialect, though, from where they come from.
Well, not quite as rich as yours.
Yeah. It's an interesting culture. It's very, very fast and country.
Yeah.
It's fast, very fast country, kind of mumbling
as well.
Yeah, doesn't jive with that, right?
Yeah,
supposed to be more laid back.
Laid back country, but for some reason, everybody back home just talks fast.
Yeah.
I have to trying to slow down so people can understand me, especially from the stage. We just came up with a new one today, the double dickle pneumonia. You ever had that?
No.
I'll go ahead as a teaser.
Is that double pneumonia? Yeah. No,
that's when you drink pneumonia. Too much George Dickel and you got a hangover. Double dickle pneumonia.
So this is work in progress.
Yeah, always.
We're always finding new ones that we say. And we're like, oh, that's one. Yeah.
We're starting a fresh batch right now. It's almost like songwriting.
So you're keeping track.
Yeah.
It's interesting because my wife started hanging around us and she was confused. And she started writing all these words down. She's like, what are these words? And she would ask us to explain them and we'd start explaining them.
Let's be sure that we reinforce your fan base and let anyone that wants to be a fan get on board. How can people follow you? Where's all your information posted? Give us all the, all the details of Facebook and
Parmalee.com. /tour for tour dates.
Yeah.
I am at everything Parmalee, obviously.
Yeah, Parmalee. You Google Parmalee and our Instagram handle will pop up. That's at Parmalee Music. Our Twitter is at Parmalee Music. Our Facebook is just Parmalee.
Mm-hmm. Matt's phone number is 615.
But yeah, you can pretty much find anything with a good Google search of Parmalee.
Yeah, great.
Google me. Google me.
So you're going to play for us? You're going to play us out?
Let's do it.
Yeah?
Are we ready?
All right.
All right.
We're going to play you a song that the title is actually a Parmalism.
Yeah. The title is a Parmalism. Great.
All right. All right. One, two. That Delta Dawn, she got that drop the hammer, she got that talking y'all, now get y'all country hammer. She got the south side, amen, down in Alabama, summertime revival down in Alabama. Sweet home, turn it up. Ought to be a law against her way she keeps her backing it up. Oh yeah, she's every bit of all that. Oh yeah, that girl is like a first class high dollar ticket on a Chattanooga choo choo. Snapshot, paparazzi camera, before the break of Blake and Miranda Lama. She got them show nuts coming in, rudder up, Panama City with t-shirt, Miss Banana. Talking about a home run, grand slam, a lamb, a lamb.
So is a Parmalism hot damn a
hot damn a
hot damn a llama.
I kept thinking, am I going to be able to figure it out? Which one's the
and there's another one in there, them show nuffs. She got them show nuffs.
Hot damn a llama. That's great. Wow. You know, I'm always so intrigued. You could talk to people and talk to people and talk to people, but when they play music.
Yeah.
The real thing is right there.
Thought you were going to say, then they finally shut up.
then it's like it all just, the whole thing reveals itself, right? The energy and who you are. And so I just want to wish you maybe not 300 nights on the road, but as many nights on the road as you want.
Thank you.
And just phenomenal success.
Thank you so much.
And we really hope you stay close to NAMM and the NAMM Foundation and keep us sort of on your schedule and think about coming and being with us in California and
love to do that.
Sharing your music with us there. And
we'd love to.
You know, just being part of what we're trying to do, which is to make sure that any person can play music, has the opportunity to play music, and that we can build a more musical world because we need it.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Wish you all the luck in the world, and thanks so much for joining us here.
Thank you.
At Facebook, InterTalk Radio, NAMM Foundation, with the great musicians from Parmalee, and they've made my time here in Nashville even more special. So thanks for joining us for Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.